Will you be happy to not be asked this fall? You know, is Lane leaving? Because I know every year I had you in here, it was kind of like, well, he is the program. He's the face of the program. He wasn't going to be that at Auburn. I guess he is that now at LSU. What, are you happy to move on from that?
It's complicated. Yes and no. Look, let me be clear. And I've told Lane this. Lane, all of that stuff was a pain in the ass. But Lane's a really good football coach. And he won a lot of games. And he made the program that I cover very relevant. And it made me money. So it would be disingenuous for me to sit here and go, oh, thank God that guy's gone. Now, is there a part of me that's relieved that maybe it's going to get a little more back to normal and maybe it's not going to be quite so volatile and always dealing with that? Sure. But, again, my views on him are really complex.
Man, I know it's SEC basketball tournament. We got Neil McCready in here. So thank you again. This is your third time in the studio. Really appreciate you. And
yeah, I think that's right. Third time. Good to be here, Michael.
It's been a wild year. I can only imagine for you. I mean, you were obviously with Rivals for forever and ever.
Yep.
And then you had a cup of coffee with On Three, and now you're 24/7 Sports.
Yep.
Man, what if you don't mind? Do you mind talking about that? So like basically the end of Rivals. Did you see that coming?
Yes and no. I certainly sensed that it wasn't in a great place. I had a great experience there. They were wonderful to me for a long time, 17 years. But there were obviously signs that it wasn't healthy, that they weren't really investing in it. Yahoo wasn't. You know, I think one of the things that kind of bothered me was I don't think Yahoo even knew some of us existed. You know, you would run a search for something and you would see that Yahoo had run a competitor story from something you'd covered.
Right.
You know, so that there were certainly signs. I had a contract that ran through end of October. So I had the, as you mentioned, the cup of coffee with On Three. Shannon Terry was kind enough to let me out early. He absolutely could have held my feet to the fire and made me stay through Halloween, which would have been problematic for me and them, you know, because I'd already signed a contract with 24/7. It was done. And he was kind enough to let me out. And I started with them on August the 1st, and which is a good thing because it was a whirlwind of a season, my friend. There was a lot there. And yeah, it was a crazy fall. I don't say this to be like complaining or like certainly not seeking sympathy, but it was one of those years where Ole Miss had an open date the first weekend of October. My wife and I took a little 3-day mini vacation, 4-day, I guess. I got back from there we went to Maine. We got back on a Sunday. I didn't take another day off. I guess I took Christmas Eve and Christmas Day off. That was the extent of anything resembling a day off until like January the 20-something.
Wow.
It was, you know, it was crazy. Yeah. Kiffin, playoffs, portal, you mix in basketball. We were on the road with basketball. That was an adventure. Now that was, I don't know that I saw 11-1 in national semifinals coming the same year that we did a deal with Funkies in Oxford to cover home and away men's basketball, where I was in California and New York, and it was pretty wild. Yeah.
Yeah, well, a lot to hit on there, but let me go back to something you said, because I think it's just kind of the nature of these media companies now, the Yahoo, and they get so big, it's like, I don't even know if they can manage the thing. Now, certainly, I think they could do certainly a better job, but I think the best example is ESPN. Like they, when I was growing up, that was the place to go, ESPN.com, for all my college football news. Yeah. They still have some good people there. I'm not, you know, talking down to them, but I mean, it's almost everybody has left there and work at other sites that I don't understand why ESPN would let that go. Certainly with, now maybe just because people are not reading like they used to do, but
yeah.
If you're so invested in the broadcast version of it and you have networks in it, it doesn't make any sense to me of why you kind of let that rope go.
I feel it's really interesting. I mean, you know, I look back on my first day on the Auburn beat with the Birmingham Post-Herald in August of 1998 and look at what sports media is today. And it's incredible how much it's changed, how much consumption habits have changed. Getting young people I don't think they read as much. This isn't a criticism. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they read as much.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have three kids, almost 25, one that turns 23, probably by the time you air this, and a son who's 19. Well, they didn't grow up with newspapers. They don't read newspapers. They don't, in their mind, I think they represent their contemporaries. I think young people look at subscriptions as unnecessary. And so we have to, in our field, find a way to appeal to those people, because, I mean, it's just the way it works. You, as older customers move on, you have to replace them with younger customers, or the math doesn't math.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, like, I love The Athletic. Love it. I think they do fantastic work. I mean, I'm a giant fan. Consume it every single day. And yet, I look sometimes at all the travel that they do and everything that they're doing, and I'm wondering, how do you make this work? I know they partnered with the New York Times. The New York Times, to its credit, was way ahead of using the internet compared to a lot of its contemporaries. But like, Michael, you look at just what happened at the Washington Post. The Washington Post, one of the absolute, whether you forget the politics of it all, a bulwark of sports journalism in our country. And they just shuttered it. Some of their top guys I saw were Kent Babb, left to go to, I think it's the ESPN. I think ESPN invested mm-hmm. in some of their guys. I've known Kent for years. You know, I mean, he's great at what he does. And the Washington Post just said, we're not going to cover the Commanders, the Wizards, the Nationals, the Orioles, the Mystics, the everybody else that's there, right? I'm trying to make sure I cover my professional sports bases. That's a pretty big pro sports town, Washington, D.C. And they're just abandoning it. What does that tell you? I think that, to me, is pretty fascinating. And so, you know, and then the other thing that I think has changed the game is that more and more people are more provincial in their consumption habits. You're a Tennessee fan, you just read Tennessee media. You're an Ole Miss fan, you just read Ole Miss media. I mean, there's someone on our site not long ago was complaining that we're too objective, that we're not propagandistic enough.
Right.
And I thought that was fascinating. And I honestly couldn't argue with him. You know, I mean, I think you see that more and more. There are people that consume products that are, I mean, look at news coverage in our country. You know, I mean, there's a reason that Fox News does what it does, that CNN does what it does. I mean, they're just playing to their base. And I think our field has become that way a lot, too. And then, you know, the other part, I'm giving you a really long-winded answer. These sites 20 years ago, I think, were built on high school football and high school basketball recruiting coverage. Well, Michael, I cover a program that at least in the last 6 years has been, or 5 years, has been transfer portal dependent. And they've done really, really well with it. Ole Miss has won 52 games in the last 5 years. That puts them, I don't know, sixth, seventh nationally in wins. Well, they've done it with the portal primarily. Well, fans aren't stupid. Consumers aren't stupid. And they see that. Well, they're not as interested in high school recruiting. So we're having to adjust to that. all the while, you still have a base of, I think, older customers who want that high school recruiting. They still want to know about that linebacker from Meridian or some cornerback from Taylorsville or something. And even though that era, I think, is gone, but you still have to sort of manage it from a journalism standpoint. It's kind of fascinating, really, how much our jobs have changed. You know, a site like the one that I run now or help run now, 20 years ago was a recruiting site. Now we're a news outlet. We're not a recruiting site. I push back on that all the time just because, I mean, if we're a recruiting site, why am I in Nashville covering basketball? Why was I in Palm Desert the night before Thanksgiving covering basketball, getting back, and on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, in Starkville covering the Egg Bowl? I mean, if I'm a recruiting site, that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. We're not recruiting sites. We're news outlets. We've replaced traditional media. Traditional media is dead. I mean, you look in the state of Mississippi, two newspapers basically cover Ole Miss. One is a website in Jackson, and another is a website in Tupelo that is essentially a website behind a paywall. You know, so everything's pay now, and you know we're basically one of them.
And do you think that's good or bad, or does it really just something? It is what it is.
I just think it is. I just think things change. You know, I mean, look at college sports. I'm sure we'll talk about it in a minute. Things change. Is that good? I don't know. Some. Is it bad? Sure, some's bad. Some change is bad.
Like your site, do you think it would be more successful? And I know it's successful. I'm not saying it's not, but like more successful if you did like a daily trolling of Lane Kiffin? I feel like your audience would eat that up. They'd be like, oh, hell.
They'd love it.
Yeah.
They'd love it.
But it's like, get into this to...
But I didn't get into it for
post
that.
His
right.
latest tweet.
Oh, you just nailed it. See, this is my struggle with it. And it's not about me, but I talk to other reporters who are roughly my age.
Right.
It's not what we got into it for. I didn't get into this to troll.
That's why I left. I was working for a website Saturday Down South. Yeah. That's what it had become.
I don't want to troll. And here's the thing. I don't have anything personal against Lane Kiffin. I covered Lane Kiffin for 6 years. He was fair to me. It's literally, as a journalist, all you can ask for. I can't say that about every person I've ever covered, but he was fair. We didn't communicate a lot. When we did, he was respectful. I never thought he gave anybody else preferential treatment, which is not something I could say previously at Ole Miss, covering Ole Miss. And, you know, I have I'm sure we'll get into it. I have a complex view of the way that he left. It's not, I'm probably going to bother a lot of people. Because I'll be honest, Michael, like when September 19th rolls around, the journalist in me thinks I should go down to Baton Rouge for 2 or 3 days and tell that story. Because when I was covering Auburn, I'll give you an example. When I was covering Auburn in, I guess this would be 1999, 2000, somewhere in there. I lose track of the years. Tommy Tuberville had left Ole Miss to go to Auburn. Well, I'm covering Auburn. I remember vividly. I was covering Auburn, LSU, and Baton Rouge. I left Baton Rouge after the game, drove to Oxford, and spent a day and a half, 2 days in Oxford talking to Ole Miss people, Ole Miss players about Tuberville because Ole Miss was going to Auburn that Saturday. And I thought that was really good journalism, and it was well received. And the people that consumed I guess at that point, the Mobile Register, who read my work, I didn't get any pushback about, I don't want to hear about what Ole Miss thinks. Well, I think now if I went down to Baton Rouge the Sunday, Monday before the LSU trip to Oxford in September, I think the pushback on my site would be vitriolic. Why are you giving him a voice? Why are you telling us about him? There are people that are doing the, you know, criticizing Kiffin and calling him names. And yeah, they'll benefit from that. I just, and I'm not saying I'm right. I just don't think that's good journalism. And I got into this because I like journalism. I like storytelling. I like to write. I like to report. It's the part of the changing landscape that adapt or die. And I feel like I've adapted a good bit, but I probably haven't adapted enough. I probably haven't adapted the way that I think if I faked it and put on an act and became a cartoon character, I think I'd make a lot more money. Now, I think I'd completely lose all credibility. I think I'd end any chance of anybody ever picking up the phone and going, hey, I know you're a little older for this, but I was wondering, would you be interested in a national gig or a regional gig? Or in a world where I needed to return to more traditional media and cover a different program, be hard to go cover LSU after trolling Lane Kiffin for months, right?
Mm-hmm.
And would that be fair to Kiffin? I don't think so. And that matters to me. I mean, you know, it does. And it's why I think people like me, when we get replaced, ultimately, we will get replaced by fans, hardcore fans, who don't care about that stuff, who are emotional about it, and who went from viewing Lane Kiffin as a deity to a devil. And I think that's where we're headed. And I mean, it just kind of, I think that's unfortunate, but it's where we are. You know, I mean, yeah, to answer your so really long-winded answer that I could have shortened to this, things change.
Yeah, they certainly do. And, you know, will you be happy to not be asked this fall? You know, is Lane leaving? Because I know every year I had you in here, it was kind of like, well, he is the program. He's the face of the program. He wasn't going to be that at Auburn. I guess he is that now at LSU. Are you happy to move on from that? And
that's complicated. Yes and no. Look, let me be clear. And I've told Lane this. Lane, all of that stuff was a pain in the ass. But Lane's a really good football coach. And he won a lot of games. And he made the program that I cover very relevant. And it made me money. So it would be disingenuous for me to sit here and go, oh, thank God that guy's gone. Now, is there a part of me that's relieved that maybe it's going to get a little more back to normal and maybe it's not going to be quite so volatile and always dealing with that? Sure. But again, my views on him are really complex. He gave Ole Miss 6 years, which is longer than I think he ever thought he'd give it. It's longer than I ever thought he'd give it. And he left for a job that his leaving's a really fascinating story. And you see, I think you get to see who's pretty good at journalism and who's just a troll in coverage of this. Because it's complicated. And I've told him this. Like, I understand why he left. I understand why he would want to go to LSU. I also can think, hey, the timing of that was such that that's a stain on your legacy. Now, that might not matter to him. And I think he viewed it in a way of, I can't live with myself turning down that job, staying at Ole Miss for one playoff run. Now, people can argue, well, and a lot of coaches do, and I think this is valid, that sometimes you should make team bigger than you. I think that's a valid point. I really do. I think that's a valid criticism. On the other hand, I think it's fair to look at this and say he was a victim of a really bad calendar, and a ridiculous calendar. A calendar that makes no sense, and that he really didn't have a choice. I mean, he had no good choice. He either had to turn down a job that he really, really wanted, that the people in his life, from his agent to his children to everyone, said, this is a job you have to take, or he had to leave a playoff team. You know, because if Ole Miss goes 8-4, 9-3, and they're just going to the, you know, the Citrus Bowl or the Outback, whatever's the Outback Bowl is called now, no one says anything. I mean, you say, oh, it's pretty crappy you're leaving for a rival, but you're just leaving a, you're leaving a team that's getting ready to go play a meaningless game. Because they won 11 games, he had to leave a team that was about to go play very, very meaningful games, you know, and that's why it's complicated. So when people turn him into he's the devil come September, I'm probably not going to play into that. In fact, I know I'm not. I think that's, I mean, he tried a power play. It didn't work. Ole Miss did the right thing. Ole Miss did the right thing absolutely by saying, hey, if you're the coach at LSU, you can't coach in the playoffs. And they told him that in advance. He didn't want to hear it. He wanted to have his cake and to eat it too. And I think he's a person that for most of his life has gotten the cake and eaten it too. And probably pissed him off, pardon my French, when Ole Miss put its foot down and said, no, absolutely not. And, you know, I think there for about a day or so, he basically tried to burn it down. Ole Miss didn't let him. They hired Pete Golding. Pete did a phenomenal job in the month of December and into January with the playoff run and the way that he managed the portal and all of those things. And you know, I think there's a world where everybody won, but it's going to be really vitriolic in the fall when those two teams get ready to play each other. And the coverage from different outlets is going to be fascinating. And I can already, as I talk about this, feel the pushback from a, hey, I'm going to try to treat this in a balanced, nuanced, sophisticated way. I think the people who steer into the he's a hoe versus a housewife stuff, and I'm not picking on Ben Garrett, but just in general, I think that they, that week, those people will win. Because the LSU people will do this thing of, hey, Ole Miss, man, you have no right to bitch about this. He wanted to coach you in the playoffs. You should have let him.
Right.
And no. I mean, I made a very crass analogy on either my show with Chase Parham or my show with Tyler Siski, where I said that would be the equivalent of sitting in the corner chair. I mean, you can't sit there and then have some self-respect, right? I mean, you, and Ole Miss said, no, we're not doing that. And they said that from the very get-go, and you know the rest.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen this. I wore the shirt just for you. So I call him Lane Quitten. Because he quit on the team. And here's his dog, with the jet leaving for old LSU. They left his ass. But let me ask you this, because I don't think he's the devil. But I'm among those people that his reputation's already stained. And I think it was all horse shit. Like the ESPN documentary, they called me to, as they called everybody, I'm sure they called you, to promote it. And I said, well, let me see it. And then I said, I can't promote this. You know, because I know it's fraudulent. So that's where I'm at.
I promoted it, and it was a mistake. I had Ryan McGee on my podcast. And,
right.
I won't say I fell for it. I don't know that, if I'm being completely honest, that I saw through it as well as you obviously did and others. There were some people who immediately, when they saw it, said, he's leaving. That was made for TV. That was too produced. And there were a couple of scenes in it that I didn't buy. And by the time I saw those, I'd already done the interview. We'd already aired it, you know. But I regret that. So you asked a journalism question. Can you imagine, Michael, what the response from thousands of Ole Miss fans who subscribe to my site, who listen to our podcast network, who watch us on YouTube, who help us feed our families. Can you imagine the response? That was a September game. In September, if I'd said, man, this is a fraud. This documentary smells. This feels like somebody who paid ESPN or got his agency to pay ESPN to come in and do this soft, sweet, flowery, oh, how he's changed documentary. Can you imagine the response to that?
I know what they would. You would get unsubscribe. I'm never coming back here. To hell with you. You know.
So you couldn't do that,
right?
You couldn't even hint at that. That's the part where journalism has changed that I kind of hate and that I'm not comfortable with, and where it probably is why I'm, one day all the sites will merge probably, and I'll probably get pushed to the side, you know, because you can't go there, right? And looking back, you're exactly right. That was a made-for-TV production that was a part of a design to get him out.
Mm-hmm.
I think he, and more importantly, his agency knew that some high-profile jobs were going to come open and that the reservation on Kiffin from places like Florida and LSU years earlier was, no, you just can't hire this guy. He's a hell of a football coach, but he's a loose cannon. He's a problem. I think they wanted to fix that image, and they did to a large degree until he burned it down when he got on a plane to fly to Baton Rouge. And frankly, in fairness to Lane, I don't think he cared one bit that day about image. He had gotten the result that he wanted. He'd gotten a job that, look, the guy's a hell of a football coach. He won 50 games in 5 years. Pete Golding won two more. But so the program that he put together won 52 games in 5 years. He went 11-1 at Ole Miss. He got Ole Miss to the playoffs. Had the current system been in place during Lane's tenure, he would have made the playoffs two or three times at Ole Miss. Well, if I'd told somebody in 2019 that Ole Miss would make a 12-team playoff three times or two times or hell, one time, in 6 years, no one would have believed it.
Right.
And he did it. So he's now at a program where Les Miles won a national championship and where Ed Orgeron won a national championship. And no disrespect to Les or Ed, but Lane's a better football coach than those two by leaps and bounds. So the ceiling is really high for him at LSU. Now the pressure's really high, but the ceiling is really high for him at LSU. And that was a job that he coveted. And when he got it, he took it, and at that point, I don't think he worried about anything else. I think the ends justified the means.
Yeah, and I don't know if you heard this, Neil. He risked his life. They almost ran him off the road with a police escort and all. But
that's the stuff that he should back away from. That's the stuff where I think he acted like he got his feelings hurt.
Yeah,
you know, I don't really know what he expected, but again, I think this is a guy that has always gotten what he wanted. It's always worked out for him. And maybe I don't know this. He might push back on this. I think he genuinely believed that ultimately Ole Miss would just let him coach the playoffs. And it would get to be all about him. And he'd coach Ole Miss, and then he'd go to LSU, probably take half the roster with him. And yeah, maybe that's what he thought. I don't know. But Ole Miss did what Ole Miss needed to do. And here we are.
Is there any chance, and I mean, there's no way to know this, but is there any chance that he thought, you know, this team's not going to win. So I'm not, maybe that factored in at all to where, because most people didn't think they were going to beat Georgia.
Yeah. If you made me, I can't prove this.
Yeah.
No one's ever told me this. I mean, I would bet that he probably thought they couldn't beat Georgia.
Right.
And that this would be, you know, over quickly. And then they did, and damn near beat Miami. And, you know, I mean,
right.
I don't know what he truly thought during the playoff run. You know, there was the day or two before the Sugar Bowl, there was reports that he was coming to the game, and it was like, that's idiotic. And then he didn't. And he went to a women's basketball game instead. And he, you know, I mean, there was a lot. That I'm sure that was a difficult time in a lot of ways for him, but it passed, and, you know, he's now doing the same stuff at LSU from a marketing, social media, PR standpoint that he did at Ole Miss, and they have a bigger machine from a media standpoint. It's a much bigger media market. And so, I mean, I would argue that, you know, as we record this on, what's today, March the 11th or 10th or whatever, 11th.
11th.
I would argue that he's off to a great start from a PR standpoint, with the exception of probably occasionally looking like he's still obsessed with Ole Miss a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the back and forth with the women's basketball coach and stuff like that.
It was totally avoidable.
Yeah, and that's the stuff that if you're the people at LSU, and, you know, I know Michael Bennett and those people, I'm sure that those people are trying to at least communicate with him, hey, that's not winning PR right there. Just mm-hmm. move on. You know, look, if you're at LSU and your biggest game of the year is Ole Miss, it means one of two things. Either Pete Golding kept that thing rolling and took it to another level, or you're not winning. I mean, you're at LSU. It's not, hey, just beat Ole Miss. It's beat Ole Miss and Texas A&M and Alabama and everybody else, and they're paying him $13 million, and they're putting $40 million into his football budget. Michael, they're paying him to win the national championship, not to beat Ole Miss.
Right.
It's not an or. They're paying him to do both.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, because I talk to LSU people, and I ask them, you know, is this a playoff roster, right? And they're like, this is a championship roster. I mean, that's what they're saying day one.
Well, look, if you spend $40 million, you're shooting for the national title. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you're going to win it. Other people are paying $40 million too, but if you're in that air and you're going out and you're signing the most expensive guys out of the portal, you're not doing it to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing it to win the playoffs.
Hey, last thing, I feel like I don't want this to just be Kiffin talk here, but yeah. when he made the decision and he left, and there was that whole, you know, get on the plane or you ain't coming or you won't have a job or whatever. What was the point of that, do you think, given that assistants came back and then there was other deadlines, it seems like, well, we need you here for the, and then it seemed to prove Ole Miss' point where you can't have the damn LSU yeah. coach coaching us, and we got the portal open, and
that was never debatable.
Right.
Whether he understood that or not, I don't know. That was never debatable. And then from his perspective, look, the moment that he told Ole Miss that he was going to LSU, he became the LSU coach, and he made decisions that were in the best interest of him and LSU.
Right.
I mean, that was the thing. I mean, that he told Ole Miss on that Saturday night, hey, I'm going to LSU. And at that point, and I don't really like this word, but you're the enemy, certainly a rival. You can't be in the building anymore, much less coach the team. That was impossible. That would have been, I'll tell you this, nobody, I can only imagine the joy and relief that Keith Carter and Glenn Boyce and the administrators at Ole Miss felt when Alabama finished off Auburn that night. Because when Auburn came back and made that a fourth quarter game, you know, Auburn wins, Ole Miss goes to Atlanta. What does Ole Miss do? I don't know. I think they may have let Lane coach the SEC championship game. And then at that point, what do you do then? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. that was, I'll tell you what, that night we started talking about me. That night, man, when Auburn, I was so ready for it to end. Because I could not do another week of what's Lane going to do. Because it was obvious like what Lane was going to do. Lane was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And when Auburn came back and I think tied the game in the fourth quarter and had a possession where they could go win it, I just remember pouring some bourbon in a glass, and I almost kind of felt like crying, man. I was so tired of the story. I was like, let this end. I can't do another week of this dog and pony show, because people would say, why are you saying he's leaving? I'm like, because he's leaving.
Right.
It's obvious he's leaving. If not, some of the press conferences are the most disastrous, stupidest, worst examples of public relation in the history of media. And for whatever you think of Lane, he's too smart to do that. He was trying not to do that deal where he gets cornered into saying, oh yeah, I'm staying at Ole Miss, knowing full well that he's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I think he thought he was going to Florida. And then he ended up, the LSU thing ended up really getting serious. And I think he was probably taken back by how many people in and around his orbit were like, man, you, if you're leaving, you can't leave for Florida. You have to leave for Ole Miss. I mean, for LSU, you're leaving a playoff team to go to Florida. And look, I think John might do a really good job down there, but that there's a lot further to go at Florida than there is at LSU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've heard some of his thoughts on Strickland. I'll just say he's not very high on Scott
Lane.
Strickland. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and I think that was a huge factor.
Yeah, I don't know that had Florida hired Lane Kiffin, I don't know that anybody with a straight face would have been able to say that was Scott who did it.
Mm-hmm.
That was boosters. And, you know, that story had legs in October because obviously it was moving. I mean, you know, there's clowns on every beat, certainly, but there's some good reporters that cover Florida. You know, Edgar Thompson and some other guys that were really on that story that were talking Kiffin pretty hard, and that wasn't cheerleading. They had sourcing on that, and so that was moving along. It's really remarkable that given all that was there to distract that Ole Miss team from the middle of the season on, that they still went 11-1. It's a testament to a lot of people. I mean, Kiffin included, right? I mean, they still won 11 games with him on the sideline. But it speaks to the assistant coaches. It speaks to the players, especially, that all of those distractions that hung over them for the better part of a month and a half never cost them a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now under Pete Golding, you know, what are the odds they can kind of keep that momentum going? Because I would be surprised, to be honest with you, if they're, and I think this probably means less now than it ever has, but I think they should be a preseason top 10 team.
Yeah, I think you could argue they could be a preseason top 5 team.
Mm-hmm.
They returned Trinidad Chambliss. They returned Kewon Lacy. They returned the bulk of an offensive line. They went out and did a really strong job in the portal at wide receiver again, added some running back depth, which they really didn't have a year ago. I think they improved their defense, possibly dramatically. They retained, with the exception of Princewell Amamielen, they retained everyone off of a very good defensive line and bolstered it some. They improved their linebacking core. I think they got faster in the back end. No, you know, they kept their kicker, they kept their punter. LSU made strong runs at both of them. I mean, I think on paper, from a football standpoint, it's somewhere between realistic and likely that they're going to actually be a better football team. Now, the schedule's more difficult, no question about that. And you add a ninth conference game. They play Louisville here in Nashville to open the season. I think Louisville will open the season as a top 15 to 20 team probably. So, you know, they have to go to Austin. They have to go to Gainesville. We have to go back to Norman to play Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma is going to be a good team. We talked about the LSU game, obviously. You know, they play Georgia again in Oxford, but still. I mean, they've got more than their fair share of hurdles on the schedule that they'll have to jump.
Here's one not overlooked. This is something that I've been on all offseason because we talk all these teams and we look at the schedules. It's at Mississippi State, right?
State will come to Oxford.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Now, there's about six or seven of these on the schedule. Now with the 9-game SEC slate, 8 games in 8 weeks. Ole Miss has 8 games in 8 weeks, and it ends in the Egg Bowl.
Is that right? I hadn't looked at that. I mean, there are going to be a lot of tired teams in late November.
Right.
And, you know, you don't know in this era, we're sticking with this 12-team thing for at least one more season.
That last game is going to be brutal, though, with a 9-game, eight.
It'd be brutal for everybody.
8 and 8 weeks,
and,
you know?
You don't know how checked in, checked out people are going to be. You don't know with all the tampering that's going to be going on by that point in the season.
Right.
I think, and we all do this, And I'm almost reluctant to do it now. How do you even do win, loss, toss the way we always did for years in the preseason?
It's impossible.
I can't tell you who's on everybody's roster. Right. I mean, Ole Miss went to the national semifinals, did a great job of retention, and I bet there's 45 to 50 new faces in their building.
Oh, yeah.
You look at Auburn, Arkansas, Florida, think about programs that made coaching changes. I bet there's 65, 70 new faces in the building. Hell, maybe they're going to be horrible. Maybe they'll be really good. Who knows? Like how that all comes together. Continuity is an absolute blessing now. No, very few people have it. You know it. But you know we're not that far removed from hey, this team has 18 starters back. That means I don't even know what that means anymore.
Right.
I mean, I think it's generally a good thing, but. You know, I mean, and you've got the whole, just all the different, you know, kids that played in the league in different spots, and you see it in basketball, where they just had the senior week, you know, where teams played their final home game on Tuesday or Wednesday or Saturday, and it was one kid in the whole league who opened his career at the same SEC school that he finished it, one. It's a remarkable. I mean, so that's where
it's
we're headed.
It's pathetic.
It's just where we're headed, where it's really difficult to predict what anything's going to look like. And, you know, I think for every program, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and everyone else, I think getting off to a good start is so vital, because once you absorb a loss or two losses, well, now internally people start going, well, probably not making the playoffs. If we're not making the playoffs, I need to start thinking about what I'm doing. And, I mean, the phones are ringing. Everybody knows that, except Dabo. But everybody knows the phones are ringing. Everybody's tampering everybody, right? It was a really good story the other day where I think The Athletic did it, where they quoted, and maybe it was ESPN. I don't remember. Credit to both, just in case. An SEC staffer said, you know, you want to get mad, but you realize you can't because you're doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just where we are, right?
And to your point, I believe, so that is something that I look at, and I'm probably, I still do the research, but returning production, Ole Miss was like dead last in the SEC last year. They went further than anybody.
And it meant nothing.
So it's like, what is the point of that?
Well, because like who would have, I literally know no one who can honestly say, yeah, man, I saw this Trinidad Chambliss thing coming. No one. Maybe Trinidad Chambliss?
I think you could argue, I've talked to, I don't know if you know Michael Katz.
Yeah, I know Michael very well.
He does a good job. But he said part of that, you know, him not getting the tonsillitis, I guess, was, hell, he was in a position where even at Ferris State, he wasn't even established.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't have his surgery. I may not start. And this may be my only shot to ever play. You know, so I don't even know if Trinidad saw it coming.
Probably not. I mean, in fairness, you know, I mean, I remember the first practice of that we got to see last year. He was third team, you know, and he's not a big guy. And you're watching him out there. And, you know, Austin Simmons is one of those guys that looks the part. His arm is electric. And you're watching him and you're like, well, I mean, I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to Trinidad Chambliss.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 2 months later, he's one of the hottest stories in all of college football. And frankly, had it not been for all of the Kiffin saga consumed every ounce of oxygen around that program. I mean, Trinidad Chambliss, in my opinion, should have been in New York. I had Kewon Lacy third on my Heisman ballot. Both of those guys were completely overshadowed by all of the Kiffin stuff. You know, I mean, Pat McAfee does the Kiffin stuff and Kiffin.
Remember that? Didn't you do something like that?
Now that one, I was pretty critical. I was like, this is, if we can't read these cards, we're probably in some trouble. But you know, he used those guys as props, but they weren't getting the kind of attention that they should have gotten. But yeah, I mean, maybe Auburn or Mississippi State or Arkansas or somebody who, Maybe they have the next Trinidad Chambliss on their campus, and we just don't know it yet. I mean, the fact that you looked at Ole Miss last year, and I think the consensus was 8-4, and that was more than fair. I thought. I think I said 9-3. I may have said 8-4.
I definitely did.
You know, and you based it on the way we always based stuff on. It made sense. But I do think there's some proof there that, yeah, maybe we're not going to be able to do it that way anymore. You know, you still can, but I think now you have to throw the caveat out of, hey, it's a different era and things are really different.
And I you could even argue, now maybe it was just an outlier, but it was so funny throughout the season. Literally everybody that did a like SEC quarterback rankings, and I'm guilty too, the rankings were just god awful, and I don't know if it's the money, but it's like all the guys getting paid, Garrett Nussmeier, Arch Manning, Lenore Sellers, you know, these guys that we kind of propped up, none of them lived up to it for the most part.
I think that's a media problem that we all have. In that we establish narratives in the offseason and we're very reluctant to move off of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think now you know that Garrett Nussmeier was hurt, got hurt early in camp. Lenora Sellers took a step back. You know,
DJ Lagway, another one. Of course, he was banged up.
He was not good. And then Chambliss was terrific. But because he came from where he came from, and nobody knew who he was, you kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then it didn't, you know? I mean, that game that they lost in Athens, I remember thinking to myself as that game unfolded, like, this cat's for real, you know? I mean.
Yeah, on three every week was, right? They were like, I think they're going to report. They're sticking with Trinidad.
Like, that became absurd.
I mean,
that
he's on fire. You know, that was
ridiculous. I mean, see, that's where I wanted to be a smartass and like just, you know, pick some player around the country. Go, sources say he's starting, and the source is me. You know,
I don't know if it's correcting it, but maybe I need to give Trinidad a little bit more credit because. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't he planned to go to Temple and be their designated starter? So he must have had confidence in himself that.
Well, he was going to Temple and they were going to give him what for them was a massive NIL deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly who it was at Ole Miss, whether it was Charlie Weiss Jr., whether it was Joe Judge, who looked at the film. It was literally the week that he was supposed to go and said, man, our quarterback room is thin. I like this kid. I think he could help us. And let's bring him in. And, you know, Ole Miss brought him in and offered him a bigger NIL deal. And he didn't even make the trip to Philly. But, yeah, had he gone to Philly, he was going to go to Temple and be their guy. And who knows how things are different, right? I mean, because Austin Simmons got hurt at Kentucky. And that next week, Ole Miss played Arkansas. And you go back and look at that game. I mean, how the margins, right, in today's college football, an Arkansas team that went 2-10, 0-8, fired their coach in late September, early October. That team scored 35 points on Ole Miss, had five touchdown drives, two missed field goals, and had the football at the Ole Miss 25-ish with 2 minutes to go. And probably with Lane Kiffin having to start thinking about, do we let them score so we can get it back? Because Arkansas's defense was abhorrent. But, you know, if a hurt Austin Simmons had to play that game or another backup quarterback had to play that game, I mean, Ole Miss probably loses. And if you lose to Arkansas, the rest of it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, the margins were just incredibly thin, and yet they got it done. I mean, they deserve a ton of credit for what they did because that was a team that – had to figure itself out over the course of a year and adapt to a new quarterback. And, you know, credit to Austin Simmons for not being a locker room cancer in the middle of all that. And, you know, they were very reliant on Kewan Lacy, who had a phenomenal year, and they had an offensive line that stayed healthy. I mean, Bryson Sanders, the Ole Miss center, played more snaps than any player in all of college football.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, there was a lot of stories on that team that went way beyond Lane Kiffin, and again, I give Kiffin some credit because he, despite everything that you know was going on in the background, he still got them prepared enough to win 11 games.
And can you clear something up for the fans? Because I think this is all so confusing with the Trinidad stuff. Now the NCAA is appealing.
Yeah.
That doesn't make him ineligible. He's still eligible, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's ineligible.
And the next step would be the Mississippi Supreme Court if they decide to take it?
If they decide to take it. And look,
could they just delay till after the season?
I don't even think it's delayed. It's just,
Or decide?
I would hope, just because as a citizen, as a taxpayer, I would hope that the Mississippi Supreme Court wouldn't put things more important than college football aside so that they could take on an eligibility case involving one football player. Nothing against Trinidad Chambliss, but I would like to think that there are more important things for the highest court in the state of Mississippi to decide other than did a football player have tonsillitis or not. You know, I mean, that feels sort of trivial in the whole scheme of things. It's one of the reasons I get kind of furious, really, when you think about every time the presidential roundtable and they're going to Congress. Congress should be worried about more than college football. Like, we have more things to think about as a nation than college football.
What's going on? No.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you've got Iran, you've got AI, you've got immigration, we got stuff, mounting national debt, interest rates. We have things we should be thinking about more as a country if you're one of the 535 people in Congress than college football. Just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that I got you going, I was going to save this, but what's your thoughts on student fees going to NIL?
I got in trouble for this because I have a son who goes to one of the schools that's doing that, and I think it's absurd. Like, I understand student fees going towards, you know, athletics, facilities, function, maintaining the soccer fields, the volleyball courts. I get it. Now, in return for that, students should have more access to games. They shouldn't have to wait in line for 2 days to get into a basketball game because you've sold out all of the other tickets to corporations. But raising student fees to pay salaries, and let's call it what it is. Quit saying it's NIL. It's salaries. To give other athletes, to give other kids who just happen to be able to run fast or jump high more money. You have kids who are in college who their families are sacrificing, who they're taking out predatory student loans that they'll spend a decade or more paying back. And we're going to add to that debt so that you can pay kids to play football? I'm sorry, Michael, but that's absurd. That's absurd. That's people get mad because they say, well, you're complaining about fairness. I'm not talking about fairness. I'm talking about right or wrong. That's wrong. That is fundamentally wrong. And I'll die on that hill. You can't talk me off of that hill. And when people say, well, the answer, well, you don't have to go to those schools. You can go to one of the little private schools. Think about what you're saying when you say that. Some kid, state of Arkansas, for example, who decides to go to the University of Arkansas to go to their business school. It's one of the best public business schools in the country. Their nursing school, same thing. A kid from Mississippi who decides to go to Ole Miss because he or she wants to go to their school of accountancy, which is one of the best accounting schools, public accounting schools in the country. They should not have to pay an extra fee so that other students there can get paid salary to play sports. There was a time when the free education and room and board and all those things, that was a benefit. And I'm not saying players shouldn't be compensated. I think they should. But that compensation shouldn't come from the pockets of their fellow students. That's absurd.
I'm surprised they even would even consider that, and not only consider it, but
everyone's desperate.
Make it happen.
Everyone's desperate because look, you can't figure. There's no way to justify, like, through true market value at some of these places, an offensive guard making $400,000 in, quote, NIL. There aren't $400,000 worth of endorsements for him to do. That's not a realistic thing. So, I mean, it's being, as you and I sit here today, you know, I think 18 Nebraska players are consolidating to basically sue CSC, and they're going to win. I don't know how you artificially limit what players make. I don't know how you do that. It's probably not the conversation you want to dive into here because we're probably out of time, but I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you justify saying, oh, no, there's a cap on what you can make. Well, who agreed to that cap? How did you establish that cap? Was it an arbitrary number? Who set the arbitrary number? Why is it just $20.5 million? Why not $125 million? Why not $5 million? How do you justify that? How do you figure that out? And it's one of my complaints, really, with some of the people around college sports who don't use the word broken, but they very clearly describe a system that is broken. And yet, they do it in these vague ways. This is not sustainable, they say. I don't disbelieve them. Show me. Take me to the house and show me the foundational issue. Because I'm going to be honest, from out here, I don't see it. It looks like a house. Take me to the tree and show me where it's dying at the roots. Because all I see are flowers and leaves. I don't see a dead tree. I'm inside, I guess, but I'm not inside. So I'm close outside looking in. College sports look pretty healthy to me. Everybody's making a ton of money. Arenas are packed. Stadiums are packed. TV ratings are up. Fans are as engaged as ever. Is it really broken? Maybe it is. But I think if it is, you're going to have to start explaining to people exactly how it's broken. You know, Greg Sankey just the other day said, we can't go back to the way it was, but we can't keep doing the way it is. Again, I'll take him at his word, but at some point, you have to show me what you mean. Show me your work. You know, it's the kid that takes the math test and he gets all the answers right, and the teacher says, I believe you, but I want to see the work. Kind of there. Show me the work. I believe you. You tell me it's broken. You tell me this is not sustainable. But show me. Because it doesn't seem to bother the fans. They don't seem to care how much money guys are making now, as long as their guys win. Now, when you guys lose, I think they jump off the wagon faster than ever before. I mean, I'm covering a basketball team right now that it went 4-14 in the league. They went 1-8 in home games in the SEC, and there is no interest. I mean, virtually no interest. Now, in the past, a 4-14 team, would there be interest? No, but there'd be a little more than there is now. Now there's not only no interest, but there's almost an animus of, we gave this team $9 to $11 million and this is what we got? You didn't have that in the past. In the past, it's just, man, this kind of sucks. Disappointing. I hate this, but teams, people would still show up for a senior day, right? To cheer for the guys. You know, he might have been a little lukewarm, might not have been super happy to be there, but you'd think, well, this guy did play for my team for 3 years, 4 years, sometimes 5 years. You knew that guy, right? Now, these cats are there for 9 months. And they don't, you know, it's more complicated than he just jumped around, but I'm covering a guy, AJ Storr, who played St. John's, Wisconsin, Kansas, and Ole Miss for his 4 years of college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, it's more complicated. You know, the coach at St. John's got fired. So he left, went to Wisconsin, had a great season. Kansas pursued him. It's Kansas. He goes to Kansas. It doesn't quite work out. And he looks for a fresh start, and Chris Beard and Ole Miss offer him one. So there's some justification to it, but still. If I told you in 2019 that a player at Ole Miss, his senior year, would have played at St. John's, Wisconsin, Kansas, and Ole Miss, you would have said, that's ridiculous, Neil. No way. And that's where we are. It's now commonplace. So I feel almost bad as we sit here talking about it. Like I'm picking on AJ Storr, who I like, by the way, really nice young man, but he's not an anomaly anymore. Okay. Hell, there's football players that are what, 5, 6, 7 places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was watching Vanderbilt, Tennessee basketball game the other day and some guy for Vanderbilt, I don't follow basketball too closely, but I enjoy watching it. But the announcer was, you know, every time the guy would make a bucket, the Hofstra transfer, and I'm like,
yeah,
aren't we at the end of the, like, he's a Vanderbilt guy by now, isn't he? But it's just, even, yeah, even the announcer, yeah, was like, well, this is a Renard guy from Hofstra or whatever. Yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting. And then
I'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah.
Ole Miss wins the Sugar Bowl on January the 1st. And I had to get to Norman for SEC basketball. So I got up on the 2nd early and drove from New Orleans to Norman, Oklahoma. And I got a call from a friend of mine who's a big Ole Miss booster. And he said, I got to admit something to you. And I was like, okay. And he said, yesterday, last night in the 4th quarter, a kid for Ole Miss made a tackle. And they said his name over the PA in the Superdome. And he goes, I didn't know who that was. And he said, my whole life, by the bowl game, I knew everybody. You know, there was no way you couldn't throw a new name at me. And I just thought that was funny. This is someone who's really dialed into Ole Miss sports. It means a lot to him. He gives money. You know, it matters to him. He follows it. And there was a new name in January because you don't really know the rosters now, you know. And I thought that was... Yeah. It was kind of a funny anecdote. You know, here's a team that just won the Sugar Bowl that's now, you know, going to play in the national semifinal against Miami. And there's literally a player that made a play in the 4th quarter against Georgia in a game that Ole Miss fans will remember forever. And he didn't know who that was.
All right. Last thing for you, Neil. I really appreciate your time. I want to ask you about Pete Golding. But first, I got to ask about. You just said show your work. So Dabo tried to show some work there,
yeah,
of some backhandedness, according to Dabo. But what was your thoughts on any of that? Is there any chance that Pete faces any kind of repercussions there?
Yeah, so it wasn't very smart on Pete's part to text Luke Ferrelli himself. That's what the 800 staffers walking around the building are for. I thought Dabo's complaints came across as shallow. Something tells me that Luke Ferrelli didn't leave Cal for Clemson just because he woke up one morning and said, you know what? That lake out there in Clemson sounds great. I want to go across the country to Clemson, South Carolina. I just love Greenville, Anderson. Boy, it's a nice area, you know? I don't buy that. Sorry. If you told me that Clemson tampers less than others, sure, I buy it. But you're not innocent. Don't pretend you are. If you told me that Dabo was trying to prove a bigger point and used Pete and Ole Miss as fodder because they made themselves easy fodder, okay. I'm sure that the NCAA is probably a little pissed off at Pete and Ole Miss here because the NCAA doesn't want to get into the tampering business. They know everybody's got the goods on everybody. It's mutually assured destruction. They're not stupid. But by doing it yourself, now you've got to show some teeth. And Ole Miss is probably saying, look, we'll take a pop here. Like when I was in middle school, junior high school, Glenview Junior High, we had a principal named Cisco McCarty, big guy, and he had one of those big paddles with the holes in them.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't want that paddle. And so if you knew you'd done something wrong, you know, you'd take the hit because you just wanted it to go away. But you weren't going to take more hits for everybody else, right? There was a point where you'd squeal. So, I don't know. I think Ole Miss is probably looking at a situation where they're trying to tell the NCAA, look, we'll take our hit, but we're not going to take a ton of hits without turning on everybody else, right? We've got the receipts, probably on Lane and LSU and other programs, and those programs have the goods on other programs, probably including Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. I mean, this would go on and on and on. So, yeah, if you made me bet, I'd bet that he gets hit with some sort of a suspension and ends up being one of the non-con easy games, if you will, and that it looks negotiated probably because it was, and everybody just goes on about their business because, again, as we're saying this, everyone's tampering.
Right.
You know, I mean, hell, there's people, Tyler Siski, who I do a show with twice a week, now the offensive coordinator for the Birmingham Stallions of the UFL.
Yeah.
Giddy up. Tyler will tell you that what's coming in May is a tremendous challenge for college sports, which is players unenrolling from where they are and therefore making themselves available to go elsewhere. And
the NCAA is trying to get ahead of that, right?
They're trying to. Trying to by doing it in a smart way, by not punishing the player, but punishing the schools, the coaches, the rev share. Because if you punish the player goes to court and he wins. So who knows how that plays out, right? I mean, there's always something. Just when you ever think that, okay, maybe they finally calmed the waters here, someone comes racing through in a speedboat, you know, and shakes it all up. And so I don't know. My guess with Golding is that it all kind of passes over and it ends up being not that big of a deal in large part because nobody really wants to open that up.
Mm-hmm. And in a roundabout way, if I'm an Ole Miss fan, I think that kind of excites me. I'd rather have a guy that is in the gray than I would a Dabo in this sport at this time.
Hey, no doubt.
You know?
No question. Look, if you're not tampering right now, you're not winning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't bitch about it when it happens to you. And credit to most everybody, nobody really does, right? I mean, some coaches do. And there's some people, like there's a basketball thing going on right now with an SEC assistant allegedly sat courtside at a mid-major game, essentially recruiting a transfer guy a month before the portal opens. Well, you can't do that. That's egregious. But it's the interstate thing. Everybody's going 85 and a 75. You might be a little frustrated with the guy going 86, but you're not going to lose your mind. Now, the guy that goes 130 flying by you, that's, you know, you're furious with him. And so I think at some point everybody's back on that honor system with that stuff, and that in a sport and a field that is as competitive as college athletics with these people and so much money on the line and naturally really competitive people, that's pretty volatile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's how you best describe the sport right now. The college athletics, they're volatile.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that they're broken. Maybe they are broken. I mean, that's the thing. Someone's going to have to start showing me the work that it's broken. I don't see it. And I'm in the minority on this. Most of the people that I talk to are like, oh, no, this is not sustainable. This cannot continue. What does that mean? I mean, your program's going to have a hard time raising that amount of money year over year. So that means you fall off? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe over time, markets correct themselves naturally. Maybe over time, people look at this and go, you know what? This is insane. I'm not giving this money anymore. And if enough people do that, well, the money pool gets smaller. You pay less. But right now, the players are getting raises hand over fist, year over year, which tells me that, well, the market, at least at this point, is still booming or mm-hmm. thinks it's booming.
Yeah. Yeah, I think without a doubt. All right, so then last thing on Pete Golding. Do you think he'll be successful as a head coach? I mean, I think what he's done in the playoff was remarkable.
Yeah.
The transfer portal, again, this Dabo stuff, I like these signs. But I've also heard you say, and correct me if I'm wrong here, this statistic, but since 21, I think Ole Miss is the third winningest program in the conference.
Yeah.
Which is...
Behind Georgia and Alabama.
Absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be pessimistic, but, I mean, that is that's going to be incredibly difficult to maintain.
Oh, for anyone, sure,
right?
Yeah,
for literally
the schedules are getting harder. But look, I mean, here's the thing about Pete Golding. He was very successful at UTSA. He was very successful at Alabama. He wasn't fired at Alabama. I think everybody agreed it was for personal reasons. It was probably best to move on. He specifically wanted to go to Ole Miss. If you look at the Ole Miss trajectory under Kiffin, they absolutely took a jump up when Golding got there. It's undebatable. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Lane. Those wins are Lane's. But I think if you look at the whole deal at Ole Miss, they have a tremendous amount of synergy there. They've had it for a while now. They have a chancellor who's very, very much bought in on the importance of college athletics, football specifically, and Glenn Boyce. They have an AD who has made every right move as it pertains to football in Keith Carter, who managed a crisis back in November pretty well. That could have been an absolute meltdown, Michael. Could have gone sideways super fast, and it didn't. And people could talk about, well, it almost did. Well, almost didn't. You know, I mean, I'm a Thunder fan. They almost lost in the Western Conference semifinals, but they didn't. And, you know, so they have a ton of synergy. Defensively, there's not going to be a lot of change with Pete. If anything, they're going to be better. They'll probably put more emphasis financially on defense by nature. He brought in John David Baker, who's very similar stylistically, schematically to Charlie Weiss Jr. So give Pete a ton of credit. Even though he and Lane probably didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, he's smart enough to know, hey, what they were doing offensively at Ole Miss was working. There's no reason to try to go overhaul it. And, you know, he's an elite recruiter. He's a relentless recruiter. They've been very, very good with their collective. Their fans are bought in. They've had phenomenal atmospheres there the last few years. You know, this past year, the Florida game at night when Kiffin was the coach, the Tulane game, the playoff game when Golding was the coach, they were breaking records in the stadium. The stadium was electric.
What about the Samford game? Was that the one
Citadel was not a great crowd. You know,
you praised tonight's environment. Since you got here to now, do you believe this Ole Miss fan base and program has kind of risen to the occasion to be respected and revered as a, you know, kind of blue blood or elite program?
What was today? Were you here last week?
I'm just kidding.
That's crazy. That's the craziest press conference ever. But you know, I mean, they've been really good. There's no reason to believe that they are going to have some fall off. Now, the schedule's harder, 9 games. And you do have to, when you know, for Pete Golding, this will be a challenge, obviously, like it is for any first-year coach. You know, when you go from being the defensive coordinator to being the head coach, your responsibilities change, your time management changes. You've got to be able to know when to defer and when to delegate. And those are things that, you know, he's going to have to sort of learn how to do on the fly. He does have the advantage of he's now coached 3 games where – there was a lot going on, right? I mean, a lot with the portal and the Kiffin stuff and everything. And you're getting ready for a really good Tulane team. You're getting ready for the absolute gold standard in the SEC with Georgia. And you're getting ready for a really talented Miami team. I mean, those were challenges with travel and everything else. And I thought he handled all of that with flying colors. So he won't have those distractions going into week 1 against Louisville and then on and that kind of thing. So I think there's every reason to believe that they'll continue to be, you know, one of the contenders in the SEC. Does that mean that you're going to win every year? Nope. You know, because I think the bad season comes for everyone in this era. I think it's inevitable that everyone's going to have a year at some point that it kind of falls off a cliff, and that probably will come for Ole Miss too. But you know, I think there's every reason to believe that they'll be a contender again and very much in playoff contention and you know, assuming they can stay healthy, a team that's in the mix all the way to the end of it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Neil, thanks again. Really, really appreciate you. These are always fun conversations. Before you go, can you tell my audience how to check out all the work over at 24/7 Sports and MPW Digital?
Yeah, so it's Rebels 24/7. It's part of the 24/7 Sports Network, as you mentioned. And then you can catch our podcast, MPW Digital, obviously if you're an Ole Miss fan, Blue Sky Live every morning with Chase Parham. If you're not an Ole Miss fan, but you like SEC, you like college football and the NFL, McCrady and Siskey, powered by Rain Total Body Fuel, is twice a week, sometimes three times a week at MPW Digital. We have A.J. McCarron on quite frequently, the former Alabama quarterback, now the head coach of the Birmingham Stallions. Once again, giddy up. And so we just had a lot of fun, a lot of different things at MPW, so check that out.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll cut it right there.